Could retirement plans get any more complicated? You've got your typical 401k or a 403b if you work in the nonprofit sector. Then you've got your IRAs, traditional or Roth. But few realize there's another alternative, the Roth 401k. So, should you put your money in a conventional 401k or a Roth 401k if your employer offers it? Up first today, financial planner and teacher Rob West breaks it down for us. Now, today's broadcast is pre-recorded. We're not really here in the studio taking your calls, but we do have some very interesting calls already logged on, and I think you'll find them interesting, perhaps even entertaining and helpful. Stay with us. I'm Steve Moore. This is MoneyWise Live. And Rob, my head was swimming already with the various retirement plan options here. Now we have to grapple with another K. This is a Roth 401k. What do you think?
Well, I think we can clear up the confusion, Steve. Let's start with a little background, because I'm sure a lot of folks aren't even aware that their employer may offer a Roth 401k. According to the Plan Sponsors Council of America, 7 in 10 companies offer a Roth 401k option, but only 18% of workers with 401ks use it. A lot of financial advisors will tell you they're missing an opportunity to stretch their retirement savings and gain tax flexibility.
Okay, and how would that work?
Well, just like if you're considering a Roth IRA, the main things to think about for a Roth 401k are your income and age. Roths are better for people in lower income brackets now, like at the beginning of their careers. That's because with any Roth, you invest after-tax money, which then grows tax-free. With a traditional 401k or IRA, you're contributing money before you pay taxes on it. But you have to pay those taxes later when you take disbursements in retirement. So with any Roth, you're quote-unquote locking in your current tax rate. You're counting on it being lower than your retirement rate. Well, that means you make a withdrawal down the line. You won't pay taxes on the money, whereas with a traditional 401k, well, you will.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm with you so far, but you have to make a decision. So how do you choose between a regular old 401k and this other option, the Roth 401k?
Yeah, it's a good question. First, understand that for tax purposes, both are beneficial in different ways. But for younger folks, again, the Roth 401k is the better option in most cases. When you're in a lower tax bracket, a tax deduction today isn't as valuable to you today as not having to pay taxes will be to you later. So go for the tax-free growth. Another factor in favor of the Roth 401k is that tax rates are currently among the lowest they've ever been. They'll likely go up from here, so it makes more sense to pay at today's tax rate than gamble with a higher one, making a Roth a better option. The trade-off is that you won't get a tax break now.
Okay, understood. And it sounds like the Roth 401k is really the better choice most of the time. So why would we go with a pre-tax 401k if we have the option of the Roth?
Well, that's a good question, too. The younger you are now, the more likely your retirement income will actually be greater than your working income now. That's not the case if you're an older worker. You're more likely to be toward the top of your income potential. And since most of us will have less income in retirement, it can be better for older workers to take the tax break now and fund their retirement plan with pre-tax money. Well, that would mean the regular 401k.
Okay. And is that what it's called? The regular 401k?
Just a traditional 401k.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Anything else we need to know?
We always advise people to diversify their portfolios. We would reference Ecclesiastes 11:2, give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what disaster may happen on the earth. Well, that doesn't just pertain to how much you have in stocks and bonds. You can also have tax diversification with some of your holdings in pre-tax accounts and some in after-tax. Especially if you're over 50, you want to put something in both baskets so you have the flexibility to withdraw from both taxable and tax-free pools when you retire. That will happen automatically to some extent with a Roth. Remember, your contributions are after-tax, but any matching contributions from your employer are treated as pre-tax income. Well, that's good to know if you're having trouble projecting your tax implications now versus in the future, because you'd essentially be contributing to both at the same time. By the way, a trusted financial advisor can help with all all of this if you're struggling to keep up here. I know it's complex and there's a lot to it. So if you need help, go to moneywiselive.org and look for a certified Kingdom advisor.
Okay. And if you have a benefits person at your place of employment, is it likely that he or she can walk you through most of what we just talked about?
Yes, but they probably won't want to deal with the tax implications and the planning on that.
All right. That's good to know. All right. You're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. I'm Steve Moore, and we'll be back after this. Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise Live, where we do our best to help you understand and establish God's plan for your life and your pocketbook. Let's go quickly to our phone so we don't lose any calls today. Rob, Henderson, Kentucky. Kathy, thanks for your patience. How can we help?
I was just wondering what you thought of credit unions. I never really heard you mention them, but how do you like a bank better than a credit union, or are they about the same to save your money in?
It's a good question, Kathy. Accounts at both are insured by the federal government, so there's no difference there, and that would be my first concern. However, you can typically find higher interest rates on deposits at credit unions over the brick-and-mortar banks. Now, that's not always the case when you go to online banks, because often you will find even higher interest rates, or at least competitive interest rates to credit unions at the online banks. Also, credit unions, I find, tend to emphasize customer service. And so that's certainly a good thing. On the downside, Kathy, credit unions usually have fewer branches than banks. And often, and there are a number of exceptions, but I'm just saying generally, they'll be what I'll call lower tech. What I mean by that is banks will typically spend more on apps and online banking. And so if you're somewhat tech savvy, you may find a few more bells and whistles at banks. But I think all in all, it comes down to, are you having to pay a fee, a monthly maintenance fee, and are they charging you any other fees that you need to be aware of? Typically, credit unions are a little cheaper. That's not always the case, though, especially, again, with the online bank. So I think you need to look at each one individually. But at the end of the day, I don't have any preference over a credit union versus a bank. I think you just need to compare them both. Make sure you look at the features, make sure you look at the technology, make sure you look at the interest rates, and then, of course, make sure you look at any fees associated with maintaining an account at that institution.
Okay, thank you.
And Kathy, okay. Because a credit union is generally owned locally by its members, they just tend to be more familiar with who you are. They're more compelled to work for your benefit. So we do like credit unions. In fact, the last time I was in mine, they were giving out Frisbees. Now, when's the last time your bank handed out Frisbees? That's what
When was the last time you were in your bank? It seems like nobody even walks in the door anymore.
Well, I'm the last guy who writes checks and continues to walk into his bank and gets a free lollipop. But the Frisbee was at the credit union. Now, what about ATMs, Rob? Do credit unions have ATMs as well?
They do, and they're usually a part of a member network, and oftentimes they will reimburse you if you use an ATM that's a part of the network, but not directly assigned to that credit union. So again, you've just got to compare and look at, are there ATMs in my area? What about when I travel? What network am I going to have access to? And what are the fees associated with it?
And if you never walk into your bank, that means you don't have a safe deposit box. Is that correct?
Or I just don't visit it very often, I guess.
Oh. So you're still keeping your gold bullion under the mattress? Is that no, where it's going these days?
No gold bullion in my house.
Kathy, we're glad you called. Thanks very much. Mike's in Keene, New Hampshire.
Mike, we're so glad you called today. How can we help?
Hi, thank you for addressing my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
My question revolves around annuities. At the age of 55, I took out a 10-year annuity that has now matured. That annuity paid like a 5% bonus, and it also had no downside. If the market went negative, there was the lowest I could go was zero. I have the opportunity now to either take this out or turn it into another annuity that would pay a 22% bonus, again, with no downside. And also, if there is any interest made I would be paid 50% more of the interest. Basically, if it were, if I gained 4%, it would pay me 6%. So I'm wondering at the age of 66 whether it's wise to take out another 10-year annuity.
Yeah. Tell me about your situation currently. Are you still working? Do you plan to continue working? Tell me about your work life.
No, I have retired, but I opened up a small business just to keep keep me active.
Okay, very good. And tell me about your income sources apart from that small business. What are you living off of? Just Social Security or something else?
I will be taking Social Security at the age of 66. That should be in around $2,500. And the amount that I make off of my little handyman business is going to take care of me.
Okay, and what are you living off of now that you're not claiming Social Security quite yet?
I am living off of my funds for my business. So that's okay. I have no mortgages or anything of that nature.
Okay, so you have a very modest lifestyle, and you're able to cover those expenses from your small business.
That's correct.
Okay, yep. And so when you add the Social Security to that, you'll even have a little bit of margin. So you really, this money that's maturing in the annuity, you don't really have a need for it, and you don't foresee one in the next 5 years or so.
That's a correct statement.
Okay, very good. Well, you know, I think I'm not one of those people that say never invest in an annuity. I want to understand what type of annuity. I want to make sure that I'm paying as little in the way of fees as possible. And so I like to look at annuities that are even called no-load annuities, where they're not paying big commissions out of them. I want to know, what is my return pegged to? Is it pegged to a market index? Is it pegged to a guaranteed interest rate? I want to know about downside protection, which you said was there. I want to know how long I'm locking the money up for, those kinds of things. But what I would say to you, Mike, is because your expenses, unless on something unforeseen happens, you had a major medical event, or you had to go, into a assisted living facility or something like that. But obviously, we don't see anything on the horizon now. Only the Lord knows whether that would be a reality. You have flexibility. And if you like the idea of not having any downside risk, and you like the idea that you're willing to perhaps give up a little bit in the way of potential return for a product that has worked for you, and you like the idea that you can transfer risk to the insurance company in the next 10 years in the same way you did in the previous 10 years, then I'd say there's no problem with that. I might, just before you do it, get the advice of a financial professional who you could just pay for their time, just to look at the product, see if there's anything you're missing, read the fine print with you, think about how you would access the funds if you needed them for something unforeseen and what the penalty would be, and just go into it with your eyes wide open. And if you need somebody to give you that counsel, you could find a certified Kingdom advisor at our website, moneywiselive.org.
Okay.
What do you think, Mike?
That's good advice. Good advice. Yeah.
All right.
I appreciate that. You have confirmed a lot of my thoughts.
Good. Well, thank you for your call. Lord bless you and what should be an exciting season of life. You don't have a lot of debt, any, frankly, and you've got really an opportunity to say, Lord, what do you have for me in this season? And I'm excited for you as you think about and pray about that.
Mike, we wish you the best. Don't cut your finger off in your handyman business, okay?
There we go. Be blessed.
All right,
I was projecting my own lack of handyman skills into Mike. He's probably the consummate pro. I'm the guy who cuts off his finger. And remember, measure twice. In my case, 10 or 12 times. And then cut once. Keep praying. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Today, we're not live, so if you hear that phone number, please don't call, but do stick around. Lots of good information ahead. If you're listening right now, please don't try to call. Today's program is a broadcast we previously recorded. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we hope you'll stick around and enjoy the rest of the program. Let's go to Statesboro, Georgia. Helen, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm 63 years old, and I'm debt-free, and I'm looking to move to Ireland to live with my daughter. I have an inheritance of $100,000, and I'm trying to decide whether I should put it in. I have a 403B, and whether to put it in mutual funds or, you know, I just really don't know what to do with the money. So that's why I called.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you did. Tell me about this big move. How exciting. So you're moving to Ireland, huh?
Yes, I'm very excited. My daughter lives there with her family, and she has two young children that are 8 and 3, and I'm going to go there and be their nanny, basically.
Oh, my goodness. Got to
help them out.
That's great.
Maybe do a little travel.
Yeah, sounds fabulous. What a beautiful country. Well, let me ask you this. I suspect you're not going to have a lot in the way of expenses over there. Is that right, apart from your travel?
That's right. That's right. I won't have really any other than travel.
Okay, very good. And so how long do you anticipate being there? I realize things can change, but what are your expectations?
Well, I'm planning to live there as long as they live there and as long as my health is where I can. Because one of the things I had thought is I might have need to get a long-term care policy, but that was just an idea. Yeah. I do have some, issues with orthopedic problems, but, back surgery, things like that. But
very good.
I'll be there as long as I can.
And are they there on a temporary assignment, or are they there for the long haul as well?
Oh, no. She married an Irishman.
Okay.
So they're there.
All right. Very good. Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think given that you have these assets, the 403B and now this inheritance that's coming, that you're moving and you're not really going to have much in the way of expenses, you obviously just want to manage this well. And so I think it's a good opportunity for you to find an investment professional who can manage this money for you on a way that reflects your risk tolerance, your goals and objectives, the other assets that you have. Perhaps it's time to roll that 403B to an IRA, and you'd have that money plus this $100,000, and invest it in such a way that there's enough cash or cash equivalents in there that you can access it as needed if you decide to take a trip, but that the money is working for you, and so the money that you're pulling out is being replenished over time through your investments. You don't necessarily have to, take a lot of risk with it. But I think the key is to find the right investment mix that's going to give you the return you need to hopefully offset any withdrawals that you take, but also see it grow over time so that through inflation, you're not losing your earning potential. You'd also want to consider tax implications of you living overseas. And so you'd want somebody who understands that. I think beyond that, Helen, I like the idea of considering a long-term care policy. You're just going to want to understand the implications of you being overseas before you consider any policy to make sure that it would provide the coverage you need, given that you're outside the United States. But that is probably the largest risk that you have, that you would need some long-term care. The average is 3 years, and it can cost you several hundred thousand dollars, depending on what type of care that you need. And so I think being able to look at a policy like that and then buying one that you can afford that fits the needs that you have, would be a wise decision. And I think, right now, at your age, you are right, to where it's still cost effective, but once you get beyond 65, it is going to become cost prohibitive. Now, your medical issues are going to factor into that, and so you're going to have to understand what the cost is based on the medical underwriting, and just keep in mind that different companies look at different medical conditions differently. So one company may not rate you based on your medical conditions, whereas another might. And so you're going to need to not only understand how the money could be used if it pays out for long-term care overseas, but you're also going to have to understand how the medical underwriting will be affected as well. So I think those are your next two steps to explore the long-term care insurance and to get an investment professional who can assist you. We would recommend a certified Kingdom advisor, and you can find one right there in Georgia that would be able to assist you when you go to moneywiselive.org and just click on find a professional.
Okay.
How's that sound, Helen?
All right. All right. That's great. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited for you and this new adventure that you're on with your kids and with the Lord, and all the best to you.
Thank you, and to you as well.
All right.
Thanks, Helen. God bless. Except, unless she goes online, she won't be able to hear money-wise when she's over there.
But, good news is the World Wide Web reaches everywhere.
Fantastic, right? Isn't it? Yeah. Fantastic. Rob, here's an email from Erica. As you suggested, Rob, we have saved up $1,000 for emergencies. We live on one irregular income. We received an inheritance, and we aren't sure if we should pay down our debt or build up our savings to cover 6 months' worth of expenses. What do you think?
Ah, yes. And so I would start by saying, when you say, Erica, pay down your debt, if you have credit cards, I'd put another $500 with that $1,000, and I'd focus on paying off those credit cards. But don't do it until you have a spending plan that you're confident you can live by, because what I don't want to see is you take this inheritance, take care of the credit cards, but then you're still living beyond your means, if in fact you are, and the credit card debt comes right back over the next 12 months. So get the spending plan in place, add $500 to your emergency fund, and then pay off the credit cards. If you don't have credit cards, and we're talking about a house payment or a car payment, then I would go ahead and boost that emergency savings all the way up to the 6 months, and then take the balance and look at where you might want to put it for the long term. Save it, saving for college, maybe retirement savings, other investments, those types of things.
Most likely that inheritance will only happen once in your life, so you want to use it carefully and prayerfully. We appreciate that email. Send us an email if you'd like, questions@moneywise.org, questions@moneywise.org. We'll be back with more MoneyWise right after this. We're blessed that you're joining us today. Thank you very much for that. Rob, with your permission, sir, let's go right to our phones. Cindy is in Illinois, and you have what kind of call or question for us today, Cindy?
Well, I would want to know if it's a good idea to borrow from a thrift savings fund. A coworker was talking to me about he has borrowed against his to buy a car instead of paying a higher interest. And I was wondering if it's a good idea to do that as far as paying credit cards off that have the higher interest.
Yeah. You can borrow from a TSP, a thrift savings plan, while you're employed by the federal government or a member of the uniformed services. But you have to consider the impact, and I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, basically the way it works is you can take out a minimum of $1,000 up to a maximum of, I believe it's around $50,000, and you can't go over the contributions that you've put in. So when you're borrowing from it, it would be from your own contributions and earnings. You would not be able to borrow from anything that was put in under the retirement system, the agency contributions or earnings. But you could take it out. Typically, you'll have a repayment term of between 1 and 15 years. You will pay interest to yourself, and you would repay it through a payroll deduction. So it is an option, but the reason we don't like taking loans from retirement plans is if you happen to separate from your employer, it would all become due or be taxable with penalties. Secondly, the money was put in there, so it can be growing, and obviously money that has been taken out through loans is not available to be growing for you for your future, and so you're giving up all of that growth during the prime of your earning years. While you're still working, you can be more aggressive with your investments, and so by taking it out, that money is not in there working for you, building for your future. So even though you may be paying a little bit higher interest rate on your car, you can still get relatively low rates if you have good credit and keep your retirement account working for you and not add this additional risk of something happening where you're separated from the employer, in this case the government, and having to generate some tax implications there. So just end of the day here, Cindy, I'd stay away from it and use more traditional means to borrow if you need to buy a car or something like that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Cindy. Up to Cleveland, Ohio, Rob, Sharon is trying to help her mom.
Well, Sharon, welcome to MoneyWise Live. How can we help?
Oh, thanks so much. My mom's 82. I'm trying to help her with her finances. Currently, her expenses are greater than her income by about $500 per month. And so we're looking at trying to figure out living circumstances, refinancing her home in joint name or in my name only, and using the money to pay off her debt. That would leave about $100,000 in equity in the home, either cohabitating, or she could sell her home and buy a new home, pay off her debt, use the proceeds from the sale of the home, with the net proceeds, to buy a new home. But at her age, I'd really like her to be close to me, or at least cohabitating. So there are options. I know there's some pitfalls, maybe some factors to consider to look further into. Could you provide a little bit of advice?
Yeah, Sharon. Well, I appreciate the fact that you're there walking alongside her during this season. Clearly, we're called to do that in Scripture. And so this is a great use of your time. And I think the key is, whatever we do moving forward, we need to try to right-size the spending plan, recognizing that we don't want to take more out of an IRA than is realistic to be able to allow this money to last throughout the rest of her life, where when that amount in an appropriate return is pulled out and added to Social Security, that we can make the budget balance at that point. So you've named a number of the options here. We can either offset some of her overhead by bringing in a roommate. Perhaps there's somebody at her church or some other place where perhaps a friend could come in and shoulder some of that expense. She could move in perhaps with a family member or, you know, buy a small place or build a very small place on a family member's property. So they're there to provide for her, but in terms of getting costs down, but also to provide assistance over time if that's needed in a greater fashion in the future. I'm a little hesitant to pay down non-secured debt or unsecured debt with a loan from your home or her home, just because now we're potentially putting her home at risk. But as long as we have a clear plan that says, here's how we're going to, you know, fund the debt service plus all of her other expenses, I think what I would first look at is either bringing in a roommate. Secondly, you could look at selling the property and downsizing, assuming that would solve the problem, you know, even after all the expenses of moving and selling and so forth. And then the third option would be, if she has enough equity, which it sounds like she does, she could do a reverse mortgage. But I think you just need to recognize that's not my first choice, because it can be expensive, the fees, the imputed interest rate, and then it complicates things if she ever wants to sell it and move out or pass the property on to heirs. And so that's why I'd like to keep it a little cleaner in terms of selling and downsizing, or bringing in somebody to help pick up some of those costs. But what are your thoughts on that?
That sounds great. She would have about $100,000 in equity after selling the home. We'd like to keep the home in the family, and I'm concerned about medical costs or Medicaid spend down should she ever need it. Is there anything I feel like I'm missing something. What am I missing here?
No, I don't think so. I think you're thinking about the right thing. So I think it just really goes back to the budget and looking at exactly what are her finances, making sure you have a clear accounting of what's coming in and going out, and then just work the numbers. You know, if you sell the property and then, you know, what would you replace her living with and situation, and what would the cost be, and, you know, just making sure that the numbers balance. But all of those considerations are right in terms of the spend down and where she's going to go in the future. And so you just need to have a plan, and perhaps getting the assistance of a financial planner to come in and look at some of those things, do some planning with regard to Medicare and, assisted living if that's needed down the road, so that you know what the options are when those things come and they don't catch you by surprise.
Sharon, thank you very much for calling in today. We wish you and your mom the very best as you work through this. Thanks again. Rob, a quick email, if we might. This is from Elizabeth. She says, "Dear Rob, my young son says his $750 savings is losing money by sitting in a savings account. He wants to invest it in the stock market. Is this wise? Is it possible?"
I love that her son's already thinking about this. Well, the first thing we have to do is define what's the purpose of the money. So if this money is short-term savings, meaning he wants to be able to use it in less than 10 years, then he's probably got it in the right place. Perhaps we could look for a little better interest rate by moving it to an online savings account if he's in a traditional savings account. The other option is to say perhaps we're going to keep a portion of it in savings and take a portion of it that is more long-term. We're looking at buying a car with it someday. We're looking at using it for college-related expenses, moving out on his own someday. And then we could absolutely look at getting it invested. And it would be a great opportunity for mom and dad to come alongside him and teach him about putting your money to work, the value of investing, mm-hmm. and having a diversified portfolio and all of those things. Betterment would be a great solution for him to get started. Betterment.com.
Okay, great information, Rob. Thanks very much. And if you'd like to send Rob a brief email, you heard me read it, a brief email, just a few lines. The address is questions@moneywise.org, questions@moneywise.org. And more MoneyWise coming your way right after this. This is our final segment of a broadcast we previously recorded. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we hope you'll stick around and enjoy the rest of the program. This is MoneyWise Live, where God's direction for your money, your life, your marriage, and your career all meet together with your phone calls. And we have plenty up on the screen, so let's go to Chattanooga, Tennessee. And Peter, what's on your heart today, sir?
Hi, appreciate you taking my call. Ooltewah, Tennessee, just outside of Chattanooga.
Okay.
We've been in the house about 13 years. We got a 30-year mortgage. We owe about $120,000 on a $180,000.
Say that again, Peter. We lost you there. You owe how much?
About $120,000.
And the value of the home is how much?
$180,000.
$180,000, okay.
And it's a 30-year mortgage. If we refinance now on a 15, saving 1% on the interest rate, would that be worthwhile?
Yeah. You know, typically I'd like to see at least 1.5%. Peter, do you plan to be in this home for a long time?
Yes.
Okay.
Our home.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you're going to a 15-year mortgage. Of course, you can do that yourself by just getting a reamortization and understand how much you need to send on a monthly basis to basically accomplish the same thing. So I wouldn't refinance for 15 years just to get to 15 years. The key is, how long is it going to take you to break even? So what I would do is I would look at the cost of the refinance. What is it going to actually cost you in expenses to put this new loan in place? And then look at the savings over the life of the loan, comparing the new 15-year mortgage with an interest rate of 1% lower, comparing that to the current 30-year mortgage, but paying it like it's a 15-year mortgage. So adding enough on a monthly basis to be able to pay it off in 15 years. And then compare the total interest spent as well as what year you get to break even, so that you understand how long it's going to take you. And then just make sure you're comfortable that you're going to have to live in the property that long in order to realize that. But at the end of the day, if you can save some interest, then it's a good thing. I think the key is, with a 1% savings, it's going to take you a while to get there after you factor in the cost of putting this new mortgage in place. So you just want to look at all of those things, compare apples to apples, make sure you're not paying any inordinate fees to put the new loan in place. And then ultimately, I think the math will tell the story on what the best option is.
I think we're just about at the point where we're paid a lot of interest. Now the principal is starting to get paid on this 15. The 30. So I think it'd probably be best, what you said, just to go ahead and bump the payments up and to get it down to pay it off in less than 15 years.
Yeah, Peter, I'm suspecting the same thing. I mean, that's why I'd want you to run the amortization schedule on both and just look at between now and the end of the 30-year, if you pay it like a 15, given that you are sending more to principal right now, and a new 15 with a 1% lower interest rate, at what point do you actually start saving money? And it could be that you're just not going to save enough to go through the hassle of this, and so therefore just start adding some extra on a monthly basis, equivalent to the mortgage payment of your new mortgage you were considering, and then just let it go from there. And you'll probably come out just about even, and you won't have the hassle of replacing the loan.
I appreciate you so much. That's kind of what I was thinking. I appreciate the rapport you guys have between each other. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can tell you love each other, you're good friends, and it's amazing. I love your program.
Well, I appreciate it, Peter, and hopefully Steve feels the same way, at least most days.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Peter, you're a blessing. We appreciate your call. Thank you very, very much. That's nice when people sense there's a simpatico, a rapport, a sense of liking one another, at least on the air. You know, I mean, I've never been to your house, but that's conversation for another day. Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Carol, you look or it looks like you have a multifaceted question here, so let's dive right in, all right?
Okay, diving. I am currently figuring out how I can I currently have everything in tax free. They are corporate tax free, and there are several. It's a lot. I need to find out how to maybe manage it more efficiently. I have been to the Kingdom Advisor Conference as a guest because I have a relative who is a financial advisor. And Jim Wise was at another place that I went to recently, and he spoke. So I decided I needed to figure out how to allocate the loose money that I have, that I'm making my dividends. I'm living on the dividends from the tax freeze.
Yes.
I want my interest for leaving my money. It's already set up in a trust, basically. I have a second to die policy that's going to 5 children. The rest of the money that is in the tax freeze, I want to figure out how to do that because life is not fair, right? And I don't think I want to equally leave the tax-free money either. I want to separate that out to different people that are going to be good stewards and are believing the way I believe and are going to manage it so that the kingdom of people will come to know the Lord.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about how to go forward at this point, because I have inherited children, mm-hmm. and I have my biological children, and they were walking with the Lord, and the others aren't. I don't want to get them all hating each other at the end.
Yes, ma'am. Well, there's obviously a lot of moving pieces here, Carol, so we're just going to scratch the surface today, but I will offer some thoughts. First of all, you sound like a wonderful person who loves the Lord. You want to pass not only a financial legacy, but a spiritual legacy and a social legacy to these children, and that's the way that we should be thinking about, you know, we realize that God gives us resources. We're to be managers of those, but at some point, we're going to have to decide who's the next steward. Are they chosen and prepared? And that's a big part of this. And so with any of these children or grandchildren, I would be thinking about both what do you want to do today during your life now, and what do you want to do at death, and how do you balance that with whatever giving you might want to be doing? And then what can you do to encourage them to understand, not only come to know the Lord, but then in terms of their stewardship responsibility themselves, that they might be growing in their own understanding of how they manage money God's way, and perhaps encouraging them. Maybe you walk them through a book together, like Your Money Counts or Ron Blue's book, Master Your Money, or a small group study that you all could do online together, like Navigating Your Finances God's Way from Howard Dayton. And that would begin to invest in them so that not only are they chosen as heirs, but you're helping to prepare them. Of course, you'd want to bring their parents into that. With regard to the asset management, If you're managing that yourself and you're happy with it, that's fine. If you want to consider other options and having a professional assist you, if you don't already, I think, you know, you mentioned a particular certified Kingdom advisor, but having a certified Kingdom advisor come alongside you and perhaps either give you some counsel or take over the management of these assets, I think is never a bad idea. And you could find somebody on our website. In terms of the wealth transfer side, I mean, there's a number of decisions you need to make. And if you haven't read Ron Blue's book, Splitting Heirs, I would recommend it wholeheartedly. It's probably the best book on this topic. But Ron will walk you through the six T's that he calls of effective wealth transfer from a biblical perspective. The transfer decision, who's going to get it? The treatment decision, are you going to treat each child equally? Or are you going to treat them uniquely, which he says is still appropriate according to a biblical perspective? And then what about the timing decision? Is it going to be during your life or after death or both? And then the title decision. How are you going to title each of these assets? And then what tools and techniques will you use, wills and trusts and all of the instruments you'll need to put in place? And then finally, the last T is the talk decision, which is really communicating to the next generation what your plans are so that there isn't that fighting, that there's clear and open communication, that they know there was a well thought out plan behind what you're doing. And again, that preparation to be a steward of these resources is there, because the last thing you'd want is for this money to in any way come between them and their relationship with the Lord or their spouse. And so there's just a number of factors there, and I think that's where a godly advisor could help you navigate all of this. But I hope that's helpful. I know we're just scratching the surface. I'll just invite you to share any follow-up thoughts or questions on that.
Yes. How do I locate a Kingdom advisor, a certified Kingdom advisor in the Columbus, Ohio area?
Yeah, there's a number of them, Carol, and you'll just go to our website, go to moneywiselive.org, and click on Find a Professional. And when you put in your zip code, every name that comes up will be a certified Kingdom advisor, and you can find somebody. I'd interview at least three, and if you have a family member who helps you with these kinds of things, take them with you, and find the one that's going to be the best fit for you. This is going to be somebody who's met significant character and competency requirements, but who is also somebody who is a specialist in understanding the application of a biblical worldview to financial decision-making and advice.
Carol, these are wonderful questions that you're asking, and it sounds like you're really doing your homework on this. And if there's anything further we can help you with, feel free to get back to us. But it sounds like you've talked to a lot of great believers that know this subject well, and check out the other resources available on the Kingdom Advisors website, moneywiselive.org, moneywiselive.org. That's it. We're out of time for today's program. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. My thanks to Judy, Nellie, Rich, and Maria for their assistance. Thanks to you for listening. Join us again next time.